Khaled, this book opens with a story, a folktale, which not only sets the stage for the rest of the book, but kind of echoes through it in different ways. I was wondering, could you begin by telling us that story?
Sure. The fable is actually being told by a father to his two children the night before they're going to set off from this village and go to Kabul. But the fable is about a village that is visited by a creature called a div, which is this mythical creature that has been prevalent in Persian literature and mythology for a long, long time. And the div comes to this village and picks a household and demands that that household grant him one child that he will then take away, and the family will never see the child again. If the family refuses, then the div will take all the children from the household. So he picks the household of this old peasant who's got five kids. They draw straws, and he has to give away his favorite child to this creature.
It's heartbreaking to read and also really beautiful. What was in your mind when you wrote it?
Well, I used the fable as a kind of a peek into the mind of a man, a father who's telling this story to his children and is about to make a rather agonizing decision of his own. And it's his way of explaining, I think, his actions to his kids, particularly his boy.
Yeah. Well, at the heart of this story are these two children, Abdullah and this little boy and his sister, Pari. And we meet them that night when their father is telling them that fable. And the next day, they are separated for close to the rest of their lives. What happens?
Well, you know, we meet them, as they're crossing a desert with their father, and they're walking to Kabul, where their father has ostensibly found work for, construction work, where he's going to build something for this wealthy couple. What happens there is, I don't want to give away too much, but it basically ruptures the bond between the boy and his sister. And that's the heart of the book, is this very loving relationship between Abdullah, who's 10 years old, and his little sister, Pari. And they're extremely close. He's almost like both father and mother to his little sister. They've lost their mother in childbirth when Pari was born, and they're not particularly close to their stepmother. And so the loss of his little sister is very wounding to Abdullah, and in many ways shapes the adult that he eventually becomes, whom we'll meet later in the book. And it also affects Pari in more subtle but no less profound ways, and also shapes the person that she becomes. And sort of the respective absences of these two people from each other's lives becomes a kind of looms over the rest of the novel.
Yeah, kind of like the primal wound. But it's fascinating to me. I mean, you've written about so many different family relationships in your books, and in this time in particular, you're really exploring the relationship between siblings. Do you have siblings yourself?
Yeah, I'm the oldest of five, so I have three brothers and I have a sister. I don't know that I really particularly have drawn from my own relationship with my siblings, but it is a relationship that interests me tremendously.
And why does that interest you? What is it about siblings and the sibling relationship that interests you?
Oh, I think it's just so rich. It's so full of contradictory dynamics. It's an intense relationship. You share genes. You share, these very powerful, transformative events in childhood. We all do. It's defined by love and affection, and yet it's riddled with envy and with jealousy and pettiness and contempt and competition, while still rooted in and love.
Well, it's impossible, at least for me, to read this and not think about siblings in other larger ways also. I mean, surely this could also be the story of Afghanistan itself, a story of a country whose people, whose brothers and sisters have been, many of them, separated from each other through war. Is there a way in which you also can see the sibling theme playing out in terms of your own country?
You know, the theme of separation is pervasive in the book, in that there is a kind of absence in the lives of the characters in this book. And it's really a book about how we as people are bound by our sense of loss. I mean, we all are defined by things that we've lost, you know, whether it is a family member, whether it is pride or dignity or beauty or memory or wealth or possession or ambition or hope or things that feel vital to us that have left these gaping holes in our lives that we try to fill in different ways and things that we either realistically or metaphorically try to reunite with.
Well, and I guess like your characters, so many of them have a choice about how they're going to deal with something that they've been separated from that they loved. Are they going to cling to those memories mm-hmm. and keep those memories alive? Or are they going to forget and move mm-hmm. on and create a new life? And I suppose, you know, you've kind of had those choices also. You know, I think anybody who has lost a homeland has that choice. Do you completely embrace the new world, or do you do whatever you can to hold on to the old?
Well, and what I've ended up doing is a little bit of both. I mean, I can't extricate Afghanistan from myself. I mean, there's a deep core within me that is emotionally bound to the place where I was born, where I was raised, where I learned to talk, and I had so many of my, you know, fundamental early life experiences, people that I loved, and that will always be with me. And at the same time, you know, I've now lived in the United States for 32 years. I have deep roots in this country. I have dear, dear friends. I'm part of a community. You know, I've fathered children in this country, and, you know, I've made my life here. So I feel bound to both. And I, at least for myself, speaking for myself, I don't feel like I have to make that choice. You know, I've sort of have a foot in each world.
To return to that theme of forgetting and remembering, mm-hmm. the little girl, Pari, who winds up moving away to Paris, she's so young when mm-hmm. she's taken from Afghanistan. She really barely remembers. But you write, there's some really beautiful passages where you write about, she has this kind of sense that something's missing. I wrote this down. What did she? Oh, yeah. She felt this absence. You wrote, it was vague, like a message sent across shadowy byways and vast distances, a weak signal on a radio dial, remote, warbled. Other times it felt so clear, this absence, so intimately close, it made her heart lurch. Sounds like you know that feeling.
I don't know that that's personal experience, mm-hmm. but what I loved about Pari, who's the little girl who separated from her brother and ends up moving to Europe and doesn't really even really remember her brother, doesn't even really remember her former life because it all happened when she was so young. And yet there's this sense that there's a hole in her life, that that the narrative of her life is incomplete. She just has a sense that there's a blind spots that her adoptive mother has not filled in for her. And, you know, she says in that chapter that, you know, a parent's job is to kind of take these scraps of memories that are otherwise disjointed and glue them together and provide the glue so that you can fashion a cohesive and understandable narrative of your own life. And she feels like that's missing from her life. But I really kind of liked writing about this kind of vague but very much and this very powerful kind of aching that was always in her life.
It's funny that both the loss of her memory she feels as a kind of wound, and yet there are plenty of other characters in the book for whom memories are very painful.
Yes. This theme of memory opens the book and ends the book. You know, and I kind of liked, really enjoyed exploring this idea of memory either as this thing that allows us to make sense of our life, as something, a faculty through which we make sense of who we are, of our world, that gives us our identity, something that protects those parts of our life that we cherish the most and experiences that are so meaningful to us, or as this kind of dictator that forces upon you things you would rather forget, experiences that are wounding and painful to live through, and yet we have to because we don't have a choice. And so this, you know, dual nature of memory begins the book. In the fable that I spoke about earlier, the father is given a potion by this creature through which he can forget about his son, and he can forget about the loss of his son, and that sort of pain is magically removed from his life.
Well, and that question of, is the potion a gift or a curse?
Right.
I mean, what about for you personally? Do you feel like your memories of Afghanistan are more blessing or curse?
To me, they're a blessing because they're very happy memories for the most part. I was fortunate enough to live through the final years of an era that is an almost forgotten, bygone era now. I mean, to the average person, you say the word Afghanistan, and the set of images that it conjures is so different from my childhood memories, in which Afghanistan was, you know, let's not overplay it. You know, it was a deeply impoverished country then, and people lived in abject poverty even then. But nevertheless, you know, this were the days before extremism and before the Taliban, before the criminal networks and the terrorists and all the foreign troops and so on. It was comparatively speaking a far more innocent era, certainly peaceful and from my perspective, a very happy era. And so I cherish those memories. I wouldn't trade them for anything. And they're memories that I've dipped into in my novels over and over again.
No, I was thinking, I know President Karzai some years ago, actually it's back around 2002, I think, made a famous speech in which he called on the people who had left Afghanistan to return. And I was thinking, maybe what Afghanistan needs is not necessarily for all of its people to return, but for those who remember what Afghanistan was like when it was still whole, to keep those memories alive.
Yes, I think that does serve a purpose, but we have more or less passed the baton on now to the youth of Afghanistan. And I think the memories that will end up serving Afghanistan well is those of the youthful population of Afghanistan. It's a fundamentally young country. 60% is under the age of 20. And they've come of age during the war. And they I think they will use those memories to shape a different future for Afghanistan. Not in the immediate future. I think the immediate future is quite worrisome and anxiety-provoking. But in the long term, I think the youth of Afghanistan that has a different agenda for the future and different vision for the future of his country, this is now a population that is becoming increasingly savvy. You know, the young, urban, professional Afghans, they're increasingly sophisticated in their thinking through their involvement with technology, through the internet, through the sort of interconnectedness of the modern world. It can't be stopped. You know, eventually new experiences, new ways of thinking will infiltrate Afghanistan. And I think that is the way of the future. In the immediate future may be cloudy, may be worrisome, and may be painful to watch. But I think ultimately Afghanistan will change from within because of its young population that does have these painful memories, and I think they're motivated to do something about them.
Khaled, is there a section from your book you might end by reading for us?
I'd love to. The section I'm about to read is we meet Pari, who is a little girl who was torn from her brother. She's now, I guess, in her 60s, and she's living in France, and she has received a phone call through which she learns about the fact that she had a brother. Paris' hands shake. A startling thing is happening to her, something truly remarkable. The picture of it in her mind is of an axe striking soil and suddenly rich black oil bubbling up to the surface. This is what's happening to her. Memory struck upon, rising up from the depths. She gazes out the window in the direction of the brasserie, but what she sees is not the skinny waiter beneath the awning, black apron tied at the waist and shaking a cloth over a table, but a little red wagon with a squeaky wheel bouncing along beneath a sky of unfurling clouds, rolling over ridges and down dried-up gullies, up and down ochre hills that loom and then fall away. She sees washing lines and women squatting by a stream, and a hawk-nosed man digging a ditch, shirt plastered to his back with sweat, and a veiled woman bent over a cooking fire. But something else, too, at the edge of it all, at the rim of her vision, and this is what draws her most, an elusive shadow, a figure, at once soft and hard, the softness of a hand holding hers, the hardness of knees where she'd once rested her cheek. She searches for his face, but it evades her, slips from her each time she turns to it. Paris feels a hole opening up in her. There has been in her life, all her life, a great absence. Somehow she has always known. "Brother," she says, unaware she's speaking, unaware she's weeping.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was my pleasure entirely.